Good morning. I'd like to call this meeting of House Fisheries to order. It's February 4th at 10 a.m. and present are Representative Olson, Representative Johnson, Chair Seaton, and Representative Feige. Today we have two orders of business. First is House Bill 177, Commercial Fishing Loans, and then we'll be followed by an overview from the Department of Revenue on the Salmon Product Development Tax Credit. Before the committee, we have version O, which we adopted as a committee substitute, and so we have the sponsor with us, Representative Edmond. Would you?
Sure.
You must stand.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, my name is Bryce Hedman. I represent House District 36. What we would like to do is to walk the committee through an amendment I believe is going to be offered. But I'd like to preface that by saying that I've got a public safety subcommittee that I'm supposed to be chairing here just a few minutes off. So if I have to abruptly leave, it's not because of any disfavor with the committee.
Okay, thank you. And we did have an amendment to be offered. Representative Johnson, would you like to offer that amendment this time so we can talk about it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move amendment, which I think would be number one, and it is designated 28LS0607/O.2 Bullard, dated 1/30/14.
Do we all have that amendment?
And I object for purposes of discussion.
Okay, and we have an objection for discussion.
That's okay.
Would you explain the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think, you know, the representative staff is also prepared. I've worked with them on this. And basically what it does, it sets a limit on the floor. And he'll be willing to explain it. And before I go too far, I need to also let everyone know that I need to head out here in about 5 minutes. But I think this kind of takes away total flexibility, adds a floor and a little security to answer my concerns. And with that, I will turn it over to the sponsor.
Okay, thank you. And I'd like to recognize that Representative Herron and Representative Christ Tompkins have joined us, and Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And because I may need to sneak out in the middle of someone's conversation, I do want to say that with this amendment, I do support the passage of this legislation in the event that I'm not here to speak to that. I think there's some other financial issues, but I think that's a Finance Committee decision, and I think the basic policy call that we need to make here is a Fisheries Committee, and I support that policy call. So if I don't have a chance to say that, I wanted to say that now before I had to leave.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Edmond.
Mr. Chairman, before I turn things over to my staff to actually walk the committee through the amendment, I want to say that I support Representative Johnson's efforts. I think the amendment is good, and it may actually add to the bill as a whole.
Okay. Thank you. And do we have a quick walkthrough of the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tim Clark. I'm staff to Representative Edmond. The amendment is inserted in Section 1 of the bill after line 13 with the new language that in the PowerPoint is in blue. Subsection 2 now reads that a loan issued from the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund may not bear interest at a rate exceeding the prime rate as defined by AS 4488599 plus 2 percentage points. It may not bear interest at a rate of more than 10.5% a year. It may not bear interest at a rate that is less than the prime rate as defined by AS 4488599 minus 3 percentage points. Or it may not bear interest at a rate that is less than 3% a year. Under the bill as amended, for any loan made from the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund, all of those above statements need to be true. With this amendment, subsection 2, you could say now supplies what you could call a floating ceiling to the interest rate, floating because it's fixed to the prime rate. a fixed ceiling, fixed because it's simply there in black and white as 10.5%, a floating floor, which is tied to the prime rate, and a fixed floor, simply 3%. Now, without the amendment, if the prime rate were, for example, at 8%, it would be lawful to make a loan at an interest rate for as little as 3%. Or in other words, a loan could be offered by as much as 6% below the prime, since the only floor is the fixed minimum 3% a year. With the amendment, if the prime rate were 8%, it would only be lawful to make a loan at an interest rate for as low as 5%. In other words, it could not go lower than 3% below the prime rate. And an example would be one of the loan programs, which is the focus of this legislation, product quality improvement loans that would be offered at 2% below the prime rate. If the prime rate now were at 8%, the interest rate on a product quality improvement loan would be 6%, well within the subsection 2 parameters. Under subsection 2, all of these statements are true. 6% does not exceed the prime rate plus 2%. 6% a year is not more than 10.5% a year. 6% a year is not less than the prime rate minus 3. And 6% a year is not less than 3% a year. A, B, C, and D are satisfied. So. However, if the prime rate were at 3.25%, as it is today, the interest rate on the loan would hit that fixed floor of 3% in D, and so the rate would be at 3%. With that, I'd be willing to take any questions from the committee, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any questions on the amendment? Reverend Feige, do you still maintain your objection to...
I'll remove my objection to the amendment.
Are there any further objections to amendment number one? Seeing none, amendment number one has been adopted. Are there further amendments to be proposed? Okay. Thank you. And we're going to... I don't believe I closed public testimony, so I want to go back to... Is there anyone in the... public that wishes to testify on House Bill 177? Is there anyone online to testify? I guess we don't have one online either. Okay, well, I'll close public testimony on House Bill 177. So I want to make sure that the department realized that I was extending to them under that public testimony. If you have further comments on the bill or the amendments, we would be willing to take those at this time. Representative Olson.
I have a question for CFAB. Can you tell me when that might be the proper time?
This would be the proper time. We can bring them up as in requesting their testimony as a banking institution. And
it's relatively painless, but I don't think we need to copy it and distribute it. But
morning.
Good morning. Would you identify yourself for the record?
Lee Klinger, president of Alaska Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank, or CFA.
Thank you. Representative Olson, would you...
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for joining us today. I was around when CFAB first started up, and I believe at that point in time it was structured to provide loan and operating funds for vessel owners that couldn't necessarily find all the funding they needed in the standard lending markets. Is that basically correct?
That is correct.
A couple days ago I was going through CFAB file, and I found your current vision.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a difference between what you started out with and where you're at now, and I wondered if you could... Is that overly bold, or... And if I... permission to read briefly.
Sure, Representative.
To be the premier lender to the commercial fishing, agricultural, timber, tourism, and resource-based industries in Alaska.
I guess I'm not... maybe you could help me follow the question. Is the statement to be the premier lender, is that what you're referring to as being bold, or that we've differed from our origination?
Yeah. I think when you started, you we're not necessarily the court of last resort, but you got people that either didn't have good credit, didn't have any credit, or needed more money than possibly they could find in the standard markets. And as I recall, a good portion of the time you just participated in loans. You didn't write the whole loan.
Through the chair, Mr. Olson, I wasn't with CFAB when they started, but I could tell you I've been there about 27 years, and it is my understanding that we were created at the request of the fishing and agriculture industry because they felt that their needs were not being met from the commercial banks. And so it is also my understanding that we were created with the idea that we would replace the state program at some time. We were never the lender of last resort. That was my understanding, that the division was supposed to be the lender of last resort. The way I've always looked at it is that the State Department kind of gets it in the crawling. CFAB does the walking, and then you hope that they're running and they go off to the commercial, the larger institutions at that point. So,
I guess the point I'm...
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This will probably be my last statement, but to be the premier lender, to me, if I understand Premier, it would be in direct competition with every other lending institution in the state, including the private sector.
Through the chair, Mr. Olson, as a private institution, I believe that we do compete with the other banks to the extent that there's any competition to be had. It's always CFAB size relatively by comparison. I would say our entire portfolio is probably smaller than a loan officer with Wells Fargo individually would service. But I do believe that, yes, we offer a service, and we do, in a sense, compete with them because we are a private agency, a tax-paying entity, and that's what you do to survive.
Representative Olson.
More statement than a comment. I do support the bill. I was just trying to get clarification in it. When I read this, I read it by a couple other people, and I think there were other people that had the same interpretation of the wordings, but thank you.
Okay. Are there any further questions? And thank you for coming and answering questions today. Did you have a position or anything you wanted to say on the bill?
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you. I wanted to recognize that Representative Gez has joined us some time ago. Further questions? What is the will of the committee? Representative Herron?
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we move House Bill 177 O version as amended from committee with individual recommendations and any attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, House Bill 177 version O as amended will move from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note, and we will be at ease for a few moments. Thank you, Representative Edgman, for joining us for the bill. The department is here. Would you please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your overview today?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bruce Tangeman, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. I'd like to thank the chair and the members of the committee for allowing us to come before you this morning to present an overview on the Salmon Product Development Tax Credit. This credit was originally put in place about a decade ago. There have been several revisions and extensions and changes that I will walk you through, kind of a historical timeline of how it started and where we are today. And then at the end of the slide deck, we've got a couple tables where we'll show you the monetary fiscal impact of what's happened over the last decade. I'd also like to introduce a couple folks in the audience. Anna Kim, Chief of Revenue Operations, is back here in the audience. And then also Tim Cottingham, I'm sure you're familiar with him. He's been the revenue audit supervisor since 2006, and he's been with the department since 1983. So I think they're probably taking bets that I'm going to get through maybe two slides before I have to go to him, but I'm going to do my best. But he's definitely the person that I'll bring up to the table to help answer questions that the committee might have. Also, the fish tax section of the Department of Revenue has a total of 7 employees. Tim's the lead, and then we have 5 tax techs that work with him. So on slide 2, the original law was HB 90. It was enacted in 2003. The intent was new investment in new equipment for new products, not new investment for old equipment for the same products. So I think this was, we were starting a process that hadn't been in place before. And as you all know, when you start a tax credit, you put it in place and there are unintended consequences perhaps. Perhaps it doesn't work the way as originally intended. But it was a new way of doing business, I think, for the fishing industry and certainly for the state. So it originally granted processors a credit against the fisheries business tax for expenditures promoting the manufacture of a value-added salmon product. It also granted a credit against the fisheries business tax for expenditures promoting manufacture of marketable products from salmon waste. The qualifying SPD credit expenditures included equipment used for filleting, skinning, portioning, mincing, forming, extruding. I won't go through the entire list, but it was a pretty in-depth list in that original legislation. And then the qualifying utilization credit expenditures included equipment producing marketable products from waste. So the credits were limited to 50% of the expenditure and the annual limit at 50% of tax on salmon. Credits do not reduce municipal share. This is an important point, that the municipal share is carved off the gross and distributed to the communities, and then any tax credits which would reduce the revenue are taken against the state share. There's a 3-year carryover allowed for unused credits to allow companies to eventually utilize those credits in future years. The tax recaptured if equipment is sold, removed from service, or ceases to be qualified before end of the 3rd year. The date for putting qualified property into service under the original legislation was December 31st, 2005. In 2006, SB 164 introduced some amendments to the original language, making it clear that processors should be producing new, innovative salmon products in order to benefit from this program. As with several different tax credits in the state, different things were added to the list of qualifying expenditures, including the canning equipment conversion to pop-top canning. So SB 164 identified non-qualifying expenditures as well. Vehicles, forklifts, general capital expenditures such as that, knives, gloves, tools, operating expenditures. Other equipment which is incidental to production was excluded. And then overhaul, retooling, or modification of existing equipment was excluded, except for the pop-top specific canning conversions. SB 164 provided a definition for the term value-added salmon product, and I'll read that for the record. The product of a salmon that is processed beyond heading, gutting, or separation in a manner that materially enhances the value of the salmon product, such as shelf-stable, retort pouch, smoked, pickled, or filleted salmon, ikura, leather, or jerky. SB 164 also identified products that do not qualify as value-added salmon products. products subjected to only one or more of the of heading, gutting, freezing, packaging, quality assurance practices, or value retention practices. The true goal was a value-added product that would qualify for this. Salmon skeins or other unprocessed salmon products, whether fresh or frozen, canned salmon except for salmon products in a pop-top can, and products produced out of the state. The 2006 amendment SB 164 also extended the date for putting qualified property into service until December 31st, 2008. The utilization credit was not extended and sunsetted in December 31st, 2005, the original sunset date for that provision. So in 2008, another amendment was made to the original language, and that was HB 321. That expanded the list of qualifying equipment. According to the sponsor, the Salmon Product Development Tax Credit encourages and accelerates the development and production of value-added salmon products in Alaska by providing an economic incentive to make the necessary investments in new technology and equipment. HB 321 also added fillet line conveyor systems to the list of qualifying expenditures. This was a new provision. It requires Department of Revenue to provide a process for applicants to obtain credit pre-approval of planned expenditures. And we'll go through some of the numbers here later on in the table at the back, just to give you a flavor of how many folks have taken advantage of that. It also extended the date for putting qualified property into service until December 31st, 2011. So in 2010, HB 344 added ice machines to the list of qualifying expenditures and extended the date for putting qualified property into service until December 31st, 2015. The sponsor statement at the time stated extending the tax credit beyond its current sunset date of December 31st, 2011 will allow the industry to continue the progress that is being made in developing, producing salmon products that will keep Alaska's fisheries competitive in the world markets. So the last two charts are a walkthrough of the gross revenue and the credits claimed against that revenue since inception. So FY 2004 would have been the first year. And as you can tell, there's been some pretty big swings. It's been taken advantage of. Yes, sir.
No.
Oh, I thought you had a question. I'm sorry. So it is. It has been. It has seen some pretty big swings, but the percentage of revenue is fairly small when compared to the total gross revenue. And then the last slide does show the last column there, the pre-approval requests. There have only been a handful. But we would like to make sure that that option is aware, or people are aware of that option, that they can come to the Department of Revenue and have a discussion about their intent to invest in something. We can give advice as far as that goes, as long as what they say they're going to do is what they're really going to invest in and no changes take place. So it's we're not signing something officially at that point. We're helping them understand how the credit is realized, so they know when they're going into an investment decision exactly what the parameters are for that investment.
Okay, thank you. So let's go to questions. One of the first ones, since we're on this slide right now, on the pre-approval basis. So are those, if people come to you with a project, there is a letter or something that says if you do this project as designed, it qualifies, or is it something less than that?
I would like to bring Tim up to the table to help with the specifics, if you don't mind.
For the record, Tim Cotton, Jim, Department of Revenue, Revenue Audit Supervisor.
Pull the mic over a little closer to you.
just twist it. Thanks. To answer your question, Representative Seaton, we do have a form on our webpage that processors can complete and submit. And at the bottom of the form is a box that we will, for DOR purposes, that we sign off on and indicate whether it's approved or disapproved. We send that form signed by me, generally, with the approved or disapproved checkbox with a cover letter indicating that we've responded and that we've reviewed and either accepted or rejected their request.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions on this part? Well, I mean, we can skip around if there's other questions. I think that it's generally recognized that this has been very helpful to the industry, very helpful to Alaska maintaining its, you know, leadership in product quality and products around the world. So I think that this has been a very important piece of how Alaska encourages manufacturing to go forward. So, Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the next logical question is, it does seem to be working fairly well. It's accomplishing the intent of the original legislation as amended. Do we simply let it continue to operate as it's operating, or are there logical improvements or changes that need to be made to the existing body of law?
Through the chair, Representative Feige, I think over the last decade we've seen the growth in some additions to the original legislation that have certainly expanded it. I don't know if we have any recommendations per se. I think we're certainly willing to listen to the industry if they have recommendations. That's kind of the way I look at it, is we're not here to tell them what they need to do to make their business better, but we're certainly willing to listen to suggestions from them, through you certainly. So I don't think we have any recommendations per se at this time.
One of the things that has come up is that there is rumor out in the industry that there was a change being proposed for the requirement for these equipment be predominantly used, and that definition, kind, my understanding has been, you know, at least half of the use has to be for salmon product quality, and there was some ideas of some draft regulations that would take that to 80% utilization, and there's been a lot of concern in the industry that, you know, you put in something for salmon product quality and then you're going to use it for cod as well or something else, and all of a sudden your tax credit goes away because you're using the equipment for product quality or for products in Alaska, even though the predominant use was for salmon. Is there any reason why the Department of Revenue would go forward with that kind of a regulation that would change dramatically the amount? I mean, it's just like with the ice machines that are allowed 50% in salmon, but if you're going to try to stimulate these processors to operate more the year around, salmon aren't available necessarily all year round, but other products are available, and having a high percentage product, ice having to be used at over 80%, and then that over 80% of that would have to be used on value-added salmon, just not on salmon, means that nobody would ever be able to take advantage of it. This is just, you know, industry concerns that I'm relating to you and want to get on the record if there's any intention to go that way, because I think that would make the credits almost unusable within the industry, or at least we wouldn't get expansion of use of equipment, which is one of the things that we are attempting to do. So and we'll wait just a minute while you're conferring, and that's fine.
I think Mr. Cotton Jim could probably address that for you here.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, the department did have a draft regulation for public response. It did define predominantly to mean 80% or more. Following comments and some review within the department, we took that back and have since rethought that and have intended to follow our current interpretation since implementation of the program at 50% or greater. So that's the way that we have the reg drafted. It's still in within the department now, but that's our intent.
Oh, well, that's good to hear, and I'm sure that's good for industry to hear, because for the reasons you pulled it back, probably is the reason that the industry was concerned it would have made the usage of these very very restricted. So that's great. One other thing we heard was just recently was the extension to pop tops and canning. And there was a question that that industry has kind of moved away from that as the innovative product and is going to a very small can that consumers can buy for less money. And my understanding is it has to have a pop top. I mean, they could go to a smaller can as long as a smaller can had a pop top, and then it would qualify. But Does revenue see then going to a new product manufacturing form, in other words, very small cans, as being innovation that puts Alaska more at the apex of the market, or is it the pop top of the small can that makes it innovative and at the apex of the industry?
Bruce Tangerman, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. I think at this point we don't have an opinion on that per se. We're dealing with what is currently on the books, and pop top is the law of the land at this point. Again, we're certainly open to recommendations because technology is continually changing. So we're going to enforce what's currently on the books, but we're certainly open to other suggestions. As you can tell what we walked through, there have been several changes, mainly due to technology and adding things to the list just over the past decade. So I think it's a good process to hear from the industry about new things coming. That's certainly not our expertise of what's out there. We try and keep up, but we're certainly willing to listen and work with the industry.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, and I think that's where everybody's trying to go, is to keep the industry on the forefront of new product forms, new product developments, and being able to sell our product into more markets. And I think we've been hearing from industry, so we may be seeing something come forward. Are there further questions from the department on the fisheries tax credits and how that's applied? Seeing none, thank you very much for the overview and appreciate it. And you didn't, Mr. Candyman, you didn't have to call very much for Lifeline. You did very well.
I made it all the way through the slide deck. That was my goal.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Are there further questions or further things that the committee would like to bring up at this time? I guess that's going to be our meeting for today. And thanks to everyone for attending. We'll be adjourned, and it's 10:37.